Welcome to the Love Irish Food Green Ireland podcast series. This is episode 11, an essential listen for everyone in the food industry. I'm your host, Conal O'Moran. Love Irish Food is dedicated to sustainable, local Irish food and drinks brands that support the many thousands of local jobs and communities that depend on our Irish food industry. Visit loveirishfood.ie for a full list of your local brands. In this series, we're looking at topics affecting the Irish food industry, ranging from the shop local movement, funding, selling online, digital marketing, and so much more. And on episode 11, we are looking into the future. We're talking about trends in food service in the coming years. And to talk to me for the next half hour or so about this is a woman who is known as the doyenne of food service at Bord Bia. She's laughing there, but she is also Maureen Gahan, who I'm told is the mystic Meg of food. She can foretell the future and already knows what the next big food trends are. And joining me is Richie Bissett, trade marketing manager for the Irish heritage tea and coffee brand Bewley's, which, like so many Irish-made food brands, is literally part of what we are. So Maureen, Richie, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for
having
us.
Thank you very much.
I'm going to throw it at you, Maureen, because yes, you are put down on my notes as being the know-all. Talk to me about some of the future trends. We've been through the most horrendous of times. Nothing is or was normal.
Yeah.
But we may get back to a normal. What is your future normal?
Sure. Well, thanks so much for the introduction, Conal. I think I might give up my job and start buying lotto tickets instead, because it sounds like I have that crystal ball, which unfortunately I don't possess. But just, I suppose, to put in context a little bit about my role in Bord Bia and what we mean when we talk about food service or out of home. So as food service specialist, my role is ultimately about helping Irish food and drink companies win more business in out of home. And by out of home, it's everywhere that food is eaten or prepared out of home. So we're not talking about the grocery shelves, everything else, but it's pretty complex. So that could include everything from a coffee shop and restaurant right through to food that you eat in a workplace canteen, or food that you eat at a match at the Aviva, for example, or on board a train. And one of the things that we recognized when we started this program a number of years back was, because of its complexity, information and insights are really crucial. And they're also, we recognized it was an area that no one else was really bringing new information or timely insights to the table. So I suppose that's what in Bord Bia we do now on an annual basis. We allocate budget and we allocate resources to delivering research reports and white papers and trend forecasts and so on.
And you have one coming up shortly, I think, next month or thereabouts.
We have a couple of things coming up, yeah. Our big ticket item, if you like, is our end of year seminar. Unfortunately, last 2 years we've had to go virtual with that, but we're looking forward to an in-person event at the end of 2022. That'll be at the beginning of November. But what we've done for the last 2 years, you mentioned, you know, the COVID and what a massive effect it's had on out of home, because effectively we were all told to stay at home. So what that meant was, from a restaurant's point of view, you know, really shutters. Not 100%. We know that some restaurants continue to trade, those that were able to do takeaway, home delivery, click and collect, etc. But it's been a pretty torrid time for the industry. So as a result of that, actually, in 2020, if I'm right, when COVID first struck, we, for the first time, introduced a mid-year white paper. And we repeated that again last year, and we've plans to do the same again this year. So basically, the companies that we were working for was saying, look, we know things are pretty awful. It's not enough, you know, for us to wait to the end of the year to find out how bad they are is pretty drastic. So any information you can give us in advance of that in terms of forecasts on how bad this might be, and not just in terms of numbers, but also, you know, what trends are happening? What has COVID meant in terms of how our behaviours and are changing? And what does that mean if you're a food or drink supplier, you know, understanding all of that? So two things. We've got the mid-year white paper, but we also have a short little, what we're calling a lunch and learn webinar on the 20th of April. And that's feedback from a consumer omnibus that we're out to field with at the moment. For the first time last December, we released, as part of our end of year report, we released an update on feedback from consumers. We went out and spoke to 1,400 consumers as part of the omnibus. And we wanted to understand, you know, how often they were eating out, how things had changed in terms of eat out versus takeaway and eat in. We wanted to understand attitudes towards things like supporting local, like sustainability, etc. And we included findings from that in our end of year report. But April, we'll see, I suppose, 6 months on, what are things looking like now?
And hopefully that is going to be looking so much better post-COVID.
Yeah.
And post-COVID, on this side of the microphone, we love what we call a segue. Because, Richie, COVID has meant one big, big, big issue as well, beyond the food, labour. And people have gone home. And labour is going to be a big issue, I presume, looking forward as well.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, we've got huge exposure. We're up at about probably 4,000 accounts around Ireland. So we see a lot of the challenges operators are facing. Staff is obviously a huge part of this. So I suppose it's important for us to partner as much as we can. And I suppose, forgive me for being a bit coffee-centric, but, you know, we work with operators to make sure that they've got the tools, the equipment that that helps them best deliver coffee with the tools they have in the business. So if they're short-staffed, there could be equipment that might help them deliver an excellent coffee without maybe having the training or the skill set that they might have previously had. So,
and we are doing, as I mentioned, crystal ball gazing here, because who knows where we are going to find staff in the future. Does anybody have a view? Is it going to just be, I hope, one of the post-COVID generation that has just dived back into eating out as much as I can, eating local, being local, eating my local Irish food, etc. But I notice all of the time, absence of staff. And in fact, I was in a restaurant the other day. We hardly got served because there was nobody there, as in there were plenty of customers, no staff.
No, it is a huge challenge, without a doubt. It was a challenge even before COVID hit. And we know, as you mentioned, you know, workers who return to their own countries, but also the fact was, you know, the huge instability within the industry. So people just leaving to go and pursue other options. And I think it'll be a combination. We do know that technology is playing a huge role in terms of trying to alleviate some of those issues, even to the extent some restaurants are looking at like robotics with it in terms of back of house. You've got these like automatic woks that'll mix ingredients and.
And front of house. I was only tweeting it about the other day.
Even front of house. Now, it is for, I suppose, if you look at Ireland, that trades itself on the, you know, Cade Mian Na Foilte and hospitality, particularly for overseas visitors that are coming in. That's a challenge. How do you deliver that Irish welcome? And we do know as well that certain restaurants, I read a lot, there was a big piece done a couple of weeks ago about Dingle as a destination and a tourist destination and the huge challenges that they're facing now, where you've got hotels and restaurants that just can't open to the hours that they want to. So they're curtailing hours. It'll take a little bit of time, I think, for that to come back, and we'll see what this, you know, tourist season, I suppose, you know, obviously we're just past Paddy's Day. That's traditionally the kickstart to the tourist season in Ireland. We do know on a positive point of view that a lot of the air routes have come back into Ireland because tourists and international tourists play a big part in food service and out of home. So we do know that there's a lot of things going for Ireland in terms of the amount of space that we have. And, you know, for consumers, a lot of whom are still, you know, rightly cautious about going back to indoor and crowded spaces, you know, that ability to eat out of doors. I know, Richard, we were talking about how outdoors, despite our weather, outdoors has really become important.
And that is, again, back to my little segue, that is a perfect opportunity to ask, how could, if you were trying to foretell the future, how could you ever have imagined that Irish people are willing to sit in the rain and eat, and because COVID made us do it? And we said, you know what, it's not that cold. Richie.
Yes, the Scandinavian one. There's no such thing as bad weather, just a bad coat. I think we've all learned that in the last couple of years. You know, we're very close to this in Bewley's. We have a lot of operators with, you know, this unused space. And I was saying to Maureen yesterday that it's almost like a new third space, in that you might have a pub or a restaurant that has outside space where previously they might have, you know, stored some goods or had a few bins, but or a car parking space. And now suddenly they've got, you know, an Airstream or I don't know the last time I saw a horse box with a horse in it, you know. But, you know, there's all these operators using mobile units. And again, you know, we're supporting with them, with the equipment that has to go in them, the training that's required. But it all comes down to, I suppose, sweating the asset. And that's what operators are doing now. They're grinding post-pandemic. They're looking to win back some of that share maybe they lost to retail. And it's an interesting, exciting time for them.
Mm-hmm. And sweating the asset, of course, it's always been a curiosity for me, is why kitchens don't go 24 hours a day
that you don't let them out. I don't mean Beaulieu's, but that companies don't let them out to other operators and just keep it going.
Interesting.
Going.
We saw a little bit of that during COVID, where you had hotels, for example, that were maybe closed and were offering their kitchens for others that were doing home delivery. That's been a big explosion. We do anticipate that that'll continue into the future, this whole area of what we call off-premises. So off-premises could mean anything from your takeaway, as I say, or your home delivery, or your drive-through. And, you know, cloud kitchens, dark kitchens that we speak about, dark kitchens have, you know, a somewhat sinister connotation. But the reality is, it's just about being smart about how you use logistics. So we have, there are restaurants now, for example, Press Up, who are a hospitality group with a number of different brands. They're going to be speaking at our webinar on the 20th of April. They have created, over the course of the last 2 years, brands that only exist online just to service takeaway. And not only, like, it's about servicing as well the whole family. So you might have, you know, teenagers who are looking for a certain cuisine, parents for a certain else. And this is about one of the future, the future that we see, particularly younger consumers really just looking for convenience, trumps everything, and technology facilitating that. But they've grown up to be able to kind of dictate what they want, when they want it, where they want it.
Is the change here to stay? Because quality, for a start, has gone through the roof. There's no ifs about that one. Irish food quality, I'm way older than you two. And I remember you going to a pub and you get one of those, remember those sandwiches in a plastic bag? Mm-hmm. I don't know what kind of carcinogens.
They're doing well on the retro.
Carcinogens. But nowadays, you go into your local, there's good food mm-hmm. there. You go, and the takeaways that you were talking about, or mm-hmm. the send-outs and all, it's just through the roof in terms of quality. Is that going to stay? Or do we default back to Asda?
I think our certainly what we heard from consumers, and we're not just in the omnibus, we're out it now, but we're also in Board Bia. We have wider global consumer studies, and we have other, you know, consumer attitude points where we capture what's going on, and they're all reflecting the same. There's definitely been this increase in support for local and appreciation of local as a result of the pandemic, and also sustainability is top of agenda as well. And I suppose that looks, you know, what does sustainability look like in restaurants, but one great example is a restaurant bakery called Bread 42 in Dublin City Centre. They introduced, starting from last November, each day. So in November, they start on Mondays. No, they're not giving away any disposable coffee cups. You got to bring in your own or reusable. And each month, they're aiming towards, I think, by April or May, situation where they've no disposable cups. So it's about packaging, but it's also about supporting local suppliers and giving that information on menus. It's about maybe activities they're doing to minimize food waste, because we know that's a big issue as well. You now have the likes of Camille Thai putting carbon footprints on menus. So a lot happening in that space. And I think, and ultimately driven by the consumer. And that's what we try and do as well. We try and forecast where that consumer is at, because whether you're a restaurant or a supplier into a restaurant, knowing what's happening at the end of
okay,
consumer is important.
Let me throw a curveball at you, Richie. The future is great and all, but for me, old timer, old Beaulieu's, best ever. So people still also want retro. You see, back to the retro. But how do you do both? How do you serve both markets? Because, of course, younger people absolutely want the latest, whatever it is.
How do you serve both markets? Well, I mean,
in the same premises, for example.
Yeah, it's a tricky one. I think one of the things we realized, I suppose, as things start to open up again, is that people, when they go out now, are really looking for experiences. So I suppose what we tried to do with the cafe specifically, and I suppose bear in mind we're much more than a cafe in Grafton Street, is to use that space and bring consumers back in the door. And that's a younger, I suppose, a target consumer for a coffee company.
And how are you going to do that?
So we are doing it, and we'll continue to do it using different experiences, different events. So before Christmas, we held cocktail events in the cafe, so coffee-centric coffee events.
I didn't know that.
Yes,
people went over my head.
They left the place wired. But we had a great couple of sessions where we were just kind of trialing something. We're going to be using the space more in the year to come and kind of use it as a, I suppose, a showcase for the brand.
I definitely agree with Richie on the experience piece. It's one of the key factors that we call out in our end of year report, that where people are going out to eat, they're looking for experience. And it's not just actually going out to eat. You know, if you look at how high street retailers are struggling in general, whether that's clothing or elsewhere, they're saying, what kind of experiences can we give to consumers to lure them out of their houses, because they're so used to online everything.
Three quarters of the millennials in the US, and I was only reading this the other day, who spend absolute billions want to go on an experience holiday. So that's three quarters. The rest of them are happy to be sitting in the sun or whatever. So there's a huge, big market there.
You are listening to the Love Irish Food podcast. For more information, visit www.loveirishfood.ie.
What other things? I want to pick your brains, Richie. If you're going to have, if you're going to use the space that we all know is kind of part of the national fabric, what else could you put into the space, or what are you thinking of for those experiences?
Well, I mean, we'd use the space, but we'll also look at doing consumer events outside. So we're going to be decided, but we're going to look at a couple of music events in the summer. So we're going to be kind of doing a Bewley's roadshow. We started last year, actually. We did an event called Grounded last year, which was the Great Bewley Staycation. We took an Airstream around the country to popular tourist locations and gave away a lot of free coffee and ice cream. So really nice consumer experience. So this year we're looking to raise the bar. We'll do some pretty big music festivals and yeah.
Well, you won't be running them, I presume.
We won't be running you won't them. No, not quite. I won't have the mic out.
So going back to the future again, Maureen, if you do your international research, what's going down well in Sweden, what's going down well in Costa Rica need not ever touch Ireland. So where do you draw the lines, or where do you draw the learnings? Yeah,
in one sense, that's true for sure. You've got, you know, own countries. But at the same time, what we're seeing, actually, there is a certain global element to this. And I think maybe online and the ability from wherever you're sitting to see what's going on in other parts of the world means that we're not that dissimilar as we think. So like I say, some of those big trends towards community as well, and how do restaurants link into community? You know, I know I live out in Greystones, and when a really interesting partnership project we've seen in the last 6 months is getting, or 6 to 12 months, is getting huge support locally. So there's a building down at the sea that Teague Lynn, who are a charity that help people with addictions, now manage. And it's a housing project there for people who've come through their programs. But they also set up a small little coffee shop, so social enterprise on site, coffee shop and ice cream, as it happens, doing really well. But they're also giving back to the community. So they ran a St. Patrick's Day event. They did a busking event for collecting money for Ukraine just, you know, last week. And I think people really appreciate that, and they're supportive of it. You know, they want more than, and they want to see. And they can, you know, we talk about greenwashing and so on. Consumers are savvy, so it needs to be authentic. I do think in terms of the whole eating out piece, we'll probably see perhaps polar. So we'll see at one end that whole off-premises QSO or quick service restaurant convenience, you know, your fast food, that will continue to gain share as it has done. But then you've also got that kind of high-end experience, which doesn't necessarily need to be, you know, fine dining white tablecloths. There's an example of Alta, who are set up a restaurant in the car park in St. Andrews, where I think it's a €95 per head or whatever. You come in, you get your set menu, and there's that kind of value for money. It doesn't need to be cheapest. It's about people appreciating, you know, what they get and the story behind what they get. Meet the makers. That's we're seeing a big support for that as well.
And Richie, of course, Bewley's have been deeply involved for 30 years with outside activities, outside of the business itself.
Yes, we're just entering our 30th year in partnership with St. Francis Hospice, and that is, this year it's going to be the big coffee social for hospice, so that's going to be in September. Yeah, into our 30th year, huge part of the business and very close to the owners, so we're looking forward to making it a big one this year.
If everybody in the industry is trying to, you know, grab its share of being nice to the community, how do you stand aside? How do you stand apart, maybe, in all of that?
I think you see the people that do it well, they kind of seem to have set their values from day one. And
who does it well?
I don't want to give another example. But I've seen some of the collaborations, for example, happening over the West Coast during pandemic, where you've got, off the top of my head, I can't remember the lady's name, but you've got some chefs now, like Katie Sanderson is another name that comes to mind, who was involved with the Fumbly. And that's another example of community-based. From the get-go, they had said, look, yes, we're a coffee shop, but we're also about community. It's important for us to set decent and fair hours for our staff. So we don't want to open 7 days a week. We want to give this space to maybe doing some kind of like yoga or other, you know.
Does that work?
That's working for them. It also depends if you want to be the biggest. And it depends, I suppose, how you define success. And is it about opening X number of restaurants and earning a number, or is it maybe keeping small but being true to
now
to
you've
your
been in the business a long time. If I were to ask you that question, say 20 odd years ago, about what is success, would you have said, oh, you've got to go big, you've got to go huge, or would you have been as reflective as you've just been?
I think it depends. Look, we work with some of the clients that we work with. You know, if they're working with some of the big chains, for them, that's great news because it's all about numbers. And but for others, I think there's a space for everything. What's likely to be squeezed is that middle piece, though. You know, and I do see, we know there's been a lot of government supports over the last number of years, and we probably see fallouts in terms of number of
define
outlets.
What you mean by that middle piece?
So you're not offering maybe something that's at an affordable price and fast, and, you know, is what it says in terms of fast food. You're not offering more of a value or a high quality local ingredients. You've got something in the middle in terms of price and generic. It's more generic, so it doesn't stand out. And I think that's, you know, that's probably where we'll struggle.
Okay, so I can actually see exactly what you're talking about. If it's generic, move away now.
Yeah, or you might get people going once and then they don't come back for the repeat business.
Okay.
Because we do know, and just to say, eating out, you know, it's all about how much disposable income you have in your pockets. And we know that's already starting to get squeezed. And at the same time, restaurants are having to deal with rising prices and inflation and everything else. So it's probably the big rebound of the 20s revival we were all expecting post-COVID is not going to happen right now. So, and ultimately, it's about saying more, when we talk about sustainable, you know, on long term, how does the industry, you know, survive best, and where does it settle? So I think there'll be some interesting.
And Richie, whatever about tea, coffee is, you're not alone in the marketplace anymore. Back in the day, it was Bewley's, but now there are many, many more. How do you take that on? How do you deal with competition? Don't tell me you love competition. I never believe people to say that.
Okay, I won't tell you that.
I want to kill the competition is what they really mean.
I mean, it's, if you look at the way the market is growing, I think with, we mentioned earlier about the quality of the product. When you talk about the retail market, in the first instance, that coffee category is growing by about 20% at home, meaning people are getting better coffee at home.
A year or?
In a year. That's what it grew last year during the pandemic, obviously.
That is a chunky.
It's probably the overall market growing at what, 4, maybe more last during the pandemic market, for retail.
Yeah. But coffee as a category probably grew about the 20%, and that was driven by the more premium coffee. So people are experiencing better coffee at home. They're going to want better coffee and food service all the time. Mm. And better coffee and food service really equates to consistency of delivery. And I suppose what we try and do as much as we can in Bewley's is make sure that our operators have the support, have the training, and reduce the downtime in their equipment to make sure that they can deliver a good cup of coffee.
Is that a big issue, the downtime?
It's huge, absolutely, yeah. I mean, the machines are... they can be a bit temperamental, to say the least.
Is that because they're made in Italy? or am I allowed to say that? I'm always fascinated about the amounts of those machines that do come from Italy. They're mostly Italian, aren't they? Or at least they used to be.
There's a good mix. They're made kind of all over Europe. But yeah, some of the classics, the La Marzocco, and that will be obviously a classic Italian brand. But there's lots of very good brands out there.
And in terms of what Bewley's can do to take on at the premium end, have you got big plans for there or...?
Yeah, we do indeed. You know, we're constantly sourcing from our single origin estates. We are, you know, looking for new product all the time. We're quality testing. We're investing in new equipment all the time. And we've got a really high quality team inside at Northern Cross to make sure that standards are kept.
Northern Cross being the HQ.
I was just going to say, it's interesting on the coffee. You see places like Pret a Manger in the UK, who are huge in terms of the number of outlets, but also traditionally would have been very strong in city centre, of course, all of which was decimated during COVID as everyone was working from home. They very quickly moved to that home subscription model. So just to Richie's point, definitely consumers trading up, you know, in terms of what they can have at home. And what we've seen as well is that growth in the suburbs now. So city centre still struggling to a certain extent, but suburban coffee shops doing great with people walking. For Irish people,
I think we like to walk into the coffee shop. Are we doing subscription? Has that taken off?
No, there is to a certain amount. And then even that whole, pods at home, that has changed. You talked about...
You've just made him grimace with the idea of a pod.
Oh, you're in that space yourselves.
Nothing wrong with a good pod. That's fine.
But like you talked yourself about, the old sandwiches with the plastic. You know, it wasn't that long ago we had the Maxwell House granules were probably seen as premium. You know, the coffee market has changed dramatically in Ireland.
Mm-hmm. So, which again segues into the future. How premium can Ireland go? Is that a function of money or is that a function of taste internationalisation or what is it?
I think we need to be careful on the money piece and not pricing ourselves, you know.
But that's a constant in this country. It always was and probably will be. Edge of Europe stuff. We fancy ourselves a lot. We think we deserve better. We won't pay for it.
I think there's a very small market that will go into the super premium space. So if you go online now, you could pay 50 euro for 100 grams of coffee if you wanted. I mean,
of Irish coffee, of coffee from Ireland.
It could be roasted in Ireland. Yeah, I mean, there's some
50
there's some,
for 100. So therefore, your standard bar thing is 250 or 250 grams. So you're talking about
you could. Yeah.
Oh,
there's a niche market for that, but I think in the main, I think it gets to a certain level, and then the gains are very small. It's marginal gains when you get to a certain point. So I think there's still some room for a lot of operators to get to that next level, or the fifth wave, as we'd call it, in terms of coffee. But generally, when people get to that level, they don't tend to want to go back to the old stuff anymore.
It helps that it's addictive as well.
Well, it does, yeah.
Come back for your fix.
Future, again, anything else, that insights that people should look for, particularly those who may not even be in the business, but who just say, God, that's a good idea, or, you know,
I think we've seen certainly the need to adapt people, you know, how adaptable can you be, and from a consumer point of view, that they're constantly looking for experiences and so on. They're always looking for more. So, you know, we've seen some great collaborations over the last 2 years, but they continue to happen. Chefs now that are maybe less loyal to a single restaurant, bricks and mortar restaurant, that are more involved in, you know, pop-ups and 6 months here and maybe. So it's, you know, great excitement and great innovation going on, but it's a challenging space to be in as well. So I think that, but consumers will support that kind of what's new, what's interesting, what can we do on social, and what can we share with our friends about, you know.
Absolutely essential, is it, the whole social thing?
It's a big part of the out of home, big part, yeah.
And getting bigger?
Or
is it topping out, or who knows?
I mean, who knows, but it does play a big role, you know, and you see...
Here I am eating my dessert.
Another example, but just in terms of just spreading the news about what's going on. So I saw, for example, there's a lady called Gráinne O'Keefe, who's the chef that runs May Restaurant in Dublin. She partnered with Danny Barry, who's another female chef, and they did an event for International Women's Day. And first of all, they went to social media to call out, to say, any women-led producers, and, you know, they were overwhelmed with response. And then they designed a menu based on the food choices from female-led producers. And then they put out tickets, and within 2 hours it was sold. So it creates this kind of, like, got to be there, you know, excitement and buzz. And then, of course, everyone who's there has to share it on the stories. And but, yeah.
Richie?
I think that's at all ends of the spectrum as well. It's not necessarily just at the higher end of things. I mean, I was down in Soares the other day, and I saw there was a takeaway that was promoting a chicken sizzler sandwich that was a TikTok sensation. So just the speed of response to that was incredible to me, because they'd obviously turned something around in a couple of weeks, maybe posted it up because it was relevant on TikTok at the time. And as I'm sure Maureen knows, trends on TikTok don't stay very long either. So this was just a short run, an LTO that they were looking to capitalize on. I just found that really interesting.
A chicken sizzler sandwich. Was it nice?
I didn't try it, actually. I was waiting for a bus, so it wasn't really bus fodder.
Gráinne O'Keefe earlier. So she has also worked with a restaurant called Bujo Burger Joint. They're in Sandymount, but they also have a off-premise only at Castleknock Junction. And they've been very clever throughout the pandemic of doing home kits and collaborations. So they link in whenever there's rugby matches. They have some of the rugby stars, you know, endorse them as well. And so if it's Six Nations, you can order your burgers to do on the barbecue, but also maybe you get your Guinness as well, or whatever the case may be. So it's about constantly staying fresh and relevant. That's what I say, you know, if you're not relevant to your end consumer.
And for relevance, now, of course, you go to Board B and you check out all the research that you're producing. Where's another good place to go to look to be relevant? Probably back in the day, New York might have been a great place to see what's coming down. Where would you say now?
Yeah, New York, obviously, you know, still New York, London, but also, you know, we've seen the growth of Scandinavian cuisine, you know, whether that's a Nordic cuisine, if you like, so whether that's Denmark or whether it's in Sweden or Finland or whatever the case might be.
Is that strange though, that you chose the Nordic countries? What are they doing?
They're doing that kind of back to basics, not dissimilar to Ireland, purity, being very loyal to their own traditions and heritage. And so whether that's there's a well-known chef and called JP McMahon, and he runs each year a three-day event called Food on the Edge, and he brings in some of these like chefs to speak about what they're doing. And it could be, you know, catering for 12 people a night in the far end of Sweden that people are waiting 3 years to get to, you know, to get tickets for the restaurant. But it's about maybe everything hyper local and, you know, using traditional techniques and just letting the music, or sorry, letting the food speak and sing on the plate. So, yeah, I think when we mention online is as well about if you're aware of or you hear of these from a restaurant's point of view, of these restaurants that are kind of setting the trend, again, following them, whether that's through Instagram or elsewhere, to see what they're doing. You know, you can do that from your own home.
Makes you hungry.
Just make you hungry. And that food, I mean, that's the brilliant thing about food and Instagram, but like some of the others, you know, Airfield is another great example of what they're doing, or Kilruddery out to where, closer to where I am, they have now outdoor pigs. They, now you're going in and you're having your bacon for breakfast. It might be a little bit rough having just driven past them on the way in, but they, you know, this like growing your own on site and using those on the menus, or maybe bringing people on foraging tours, or you know, experience or learning how to, that's a big part of the future.
Richie Bissett, I'm going to leave the last word with you, and it's going to be the hard one for you, because then, given everything we've gone through and probably still going through at the moment as well, there's no certainty anywhere. Are you hopeful for the business, for the industry in this country for the coming year?
Definitely. Yeah, I think they've grafted very hard through the pandemic. People are flooding back. There's a clear appetite and a pent-up demand for people to eat out. It's one of the things that we all, I think, miss most during the pandemic. So I'd be very bullish as a very gregarious nation. I think we're going to be okay.
I thought you were going to talk about yourself. That's Richie Bissett of Bewley's and Maureen Gahan of Bord Beath. And thank you very much for listening to this, which is episode 11 of the Love Irish Food podcast series. As the title suggests, there are 10 other podcasts waiting for you to listen back to, all involving experts within the Irish food industry, all well worth a listen. Do listen back. So for me, Conal O'Moran, thank you very much for listening.
The Love Irish Food Podcast. For more information, visit www.loveirishfood.ie.